The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Monday morning to you. It is a numbers game at VSiN, the sports betting network. VSiN.com, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV. It's Gil Alexander. It's Kelly Bidlin, producer number nine, so much more than a producer, messing with his controls over here.
Hey, how's it going?
My motor vehicle app just sent me, it's actually not a motor vehicle.
Motor vehicle app?
The app just sent me an alert, so I don't know if my car's being driven away. So, I don't know. I just might be here overnight. We'll see. How y'all doing? How's your brackets? How's everything going? What a weekend.
Yeah. I mean, it was a fun, exhausting weekend.
Oh, it's exhausting, but it's awesome.
Yes. It's
awesome. Even obviously we're speaking of March Madness, even when I'm going to count the number, like just forget betting for 1 second, just in terms of like which we had 48 games Thursday, Friday, Saturday and Sunday, right? 32 and then 16 over the weekend. And I'm counting how many games were awesome down to the wire.
That's actually a good call.
OK. You know what the answer to that question is?
A lot of crappy ones, too.
Yeah. 14 of them.
14 were awesome. Yeah, that sounds right. Yeah.
34 of them were just snoozeville. But obviously, betting implications, bracket implications, survivor implications. I'm out of survivor.
Yeah.
I'm out. Three entry format. You are allowed one buy in. So basically, you have six entries total. I had Colorado State all in the first day. That lost to A&M. And then rebought with two Wisconsins, which lost, and one Utah State. Then I hit NC State, and I'm like, I'm rolling. So the question was, what did I pick yesterday? And I picked Colorado, and that was tight.
Man,
picked the right team, but didn't get there.
Yeah.
Had to make up
that was
seating.
A great game.
Great. That was one of the 14 great ones.
Or, I don't know, great offense.
Oh, yes. Great offense.
Defense questionable.
We're going to get to the formula here. We're going to update the formula, which teams, and by the way, there is no threat to the formula this year. Let me just say that. There is no team threatening the formula this year. We'll get to it momentarily. Five teams qualify now. Five. Two added on. Remember, the KenPom numbers can adjust mid-tournament. So two have been added to the original three, if you will, of possibilities to win this all. Everybody else on the outside looking in, some further outside than others. Kelly, a little later on the show. Oh, tennis play is also coming. Great weekend at tennis. Just hitting everything right now. Over 23 units on the season, so we got three today coming up at Miami. And then a little bit later on, and I don't even know if you know this, Kelly, but a little bit later on, you know what we're going to do?
What do we don't?
We're going to do the best NCAA tradition. One tradition I hope we don't start that was happening this weekend. Most amusing announcer remarks and the most annoying commercials from all 4 days of the NCAA tournament. We're going to do that a little later. You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know it.
We're going to do it.
I wish I did.
And, of course, Maddie Cox from Three Man Weave. Mike Somich will be here to talk college hoops with us. A little hockey with Jay Conn. We'll do it all. Okay, as far as the tournament is concerned, yesterday, of course, the headlines, 15-1 for moneyline favorites, for people who were moneyline favorite parlaying, it was quite the day. Only Baylor did not get there, 11-5 against the spread. But just in terms of the tournament in general, how unbelievable this has been from a macro perspective. So this year, 10 of the 12 top three seeds have advanced to the Sweet 16. Only Baylor and Kentucky. The exceptions to that rule. Baylor and Kentucky. That's right, because Auburn was a four seed. 10 of the 12 top threes have gotten through, 12 of the 16 top fours. So three quarters of the top fours have advanced to the Sweet 16. So with all the upsets that did occur, once again in rounds 1 and 2, the round 64, round 32, really it is Chalk McChalkerson in terms of not only betting, but also seedings. The only, and of the four that were not top four seeds, two of them are fives. One's a six, and the only double-digit one is NC State, which is an 11. So that keeps the streak alive of at least one double-digit seed having reached the Sweet 16 since 2008. That barely survives. Now, if you're wondering, all right, has it ever been seeding-wise more chalky than this? Yes, 2019, the year that Virginia won it all. All 12 top three seeds got to the Sweet 16. 14 of the 16 top fours got in there.
Yeah.
So that was a little more chalky seating wise. That was 5 years ago. as far as Elite Eight, we still have the possibility of getting all ones and twos into the Elite Eight. That has never happened before. A couple times we got real close. 2009, it was 1-2, 1 versus 3, 1 versus 3, 1 versus 2. And 2007 was even closer, 1 versus 3, and then 1 versus 2, 1 versus 2, 1 versus 2. So 2007 technically was the closest, just was one seed off. That was the year that Florida beat Ohio State, the second of Florida's two consecutive national championships back then. The only time that all ones have gotten to the Final Four, 2008, the year after that, that was the year that Kansas beat Memphis in the final when they made up the 9-point deficit in the last 2 minutes, forced overtime. Mario Chalmers, of course, that, that game. So this is pretty darn chalky when it comes to seeding, but not the chalkiest. We'll see, though, if we can have the first that gets all one and two seeds into the Elite Eight.
Or this is insane.
Or as the committee is now probably saying to themselves, ha, see, we were right all along.
That's what they're telling everybody.
I guess they can tell people.
It is pretty wild. I guess I'm a little surprised by some of the... Like, I don't know. I think there were some of the two seeds that I thought were maybe a little stronger than others, right? But, like, Marquette sure looking a whole lot better. Like, I mean, I know we were always thinking they were a stronger team, but with the injuries
Kolek
and stuff.
Is so good.
He's so good.
So good.
I mean, you get him back, like, they're looking really strong. Iowa State team, I don't know if I fully believed in that team before we started into the tournament.
I still don't.
Yeah, I don't know that I still do, but you know, just say what you're saying. We are sitting here heading into the Sweet 16. All those teams are still left.
Yeah. Here's the by the way, those 14 games that were like really good. 5 on Thursday, Nevada blowing the 17-point lead with just over 7 minutes left to Dayton. Of course, people at Nevada are not gonna think it was great. Drake blowing the 8-point lead against Wazoo. Samford losing to Kansas, but making up the 22-point deficit and making it really interesting. When that horrible call by the ref was actually a block, block shot.
That was awful.
Duquesne over BYU was great. Oakland over Kentucky was obviously great with Jack Golkey hitting the 10 threes. So there were 5 great games on Thursday.
And God, I wanted them to win. I win the other day so bad. Oakland, I was ready for another week.
I did not because I I had,
NC, money
I had NC State in Survivor. So Friday. Colorado beating Florida 102-100. Yale beating Auburn 78-76. Northwestern beating FAU in double OT by 12. As it turns out, you're like, how do you win a game in double OT by 12? Well, hold my beer, because the next day, Creighton beat Oregon by 13 in double overtime. Tennessee beating Texas by 4. I guess that was okay. That really shouldn't be included. It's really 13 great games. NC State beating Oakland is the one you're referring to, 79-73. And then yesterday, there were 3. Marquette beating Colorado 81-77. That was a great game early. Alabama beating Grand Canyon by 11. That score was not indicative of how great that game was. And could that girl stop screaming
that
in the background?
Incredible.
And how much did TNT want Grand Canyon to win that game? Showing the gratuitous Grand Canyon arena shots every time they scored. Good God. And then, of course, last night, for those who were up, and we'll get into that in a minute, Houston 100, A&M 95 in what could have been the most amazing thing we've ever seen, but didn't end up working out that way.
Kenny Smith said something about it in the studio show about them wanting Grand Canyon to win. He's like, yeah, we showed all this and they did all this and they tried to stay in there.
We'll go through the last part of that. I just want to say I know this is everybody saying this, but I have to echo this. Most people in this country probably missed the end of that game last night. The Saturday and Sunday schedule.
Oh, so bizarre.
Is the most ridiculous thing in sports broadcasting. And I did a little research on this in 2011, because I was like, why is it the way it is? Because when we were kids, it wasn't staggered like this on Saturday and Sunday, the second round, if you will. There were multiple... fantastic finishes that you could turn from one. Now it's this one.
Right.
And CBS goes to this game. That was when it was all on one network. When they went to the 4 networks, CBS, TNT, TBS, and True TV, which we only rediscover once a year when this tournament comes on. Unless you're an Impractical Jokers fan, I think I was on that for a while.
That's the only other thing I know that they air because it comes on after the tournament.
So they decided, like, one of their big things in this deal was, too many games where people aren't able to see all of the games. Like, it was really important to them to not have as many simultaneous or right after another fantastic finishes. So they came up with this schedule. It started 2011, but I seem to remember it a little earlier than that. But 2011 is what really kicked in. And you have these full standalone games at the beginning. And what you leave yourself open to is a couple things. One, you leave yourself open to the blowout that happens, like the Purdue game yesterday. Like, what did you do if I was betting tennis? But if you were only locked into basketball, you were stuck with only that game. And you're like, well, there's nothing to watch here anymore.
Yeah.
So there was that. But the ridiculousness of the schedule that they have now is that you got 8 games on Saturday and 8 games on Sunday. By 7 p.m. Eastern, you're not even halfway through the schedule.
Yes. Yes.
What is there is no, you cannot justify that.
I'm with you. I'm with you because it's really, I'm okay with the idea of, you know, standalone, and kind of like how the NFL does some of the playoffs, right? If you want to go standalone, like your earliest game and your latest game, I'm fine with that, right? Because maybe people, it's too early for them to get up. Or like Yale last night, right? Like, that was a perfect example. I was like, great, I can go to bed early. Like, this is awesome. Like, I'm fine with this being a blowout. But it's so weird when you're sitting there at like 7 Eastern and like there's not a game going on. Like, you have to wait. Like, one game just finished and now you got to wait 20 minutes for another one to get started.
Here's what you missed at the end of regulation of the Houston A&M game. Less than 2 minutes left. Houston's up 12. A&M bucket to 10. Houston hits one of two free throws. A&M bucket to 9. Houston one of two free throws. A&M gets a bucket, closes it to 8. Houston turnover, and then a three-pointer that closes it to 5. Then Houston, 2 of 2 free throws to knock it back up to 7. A&M gets fouled on a 3, 3 of 3 to knock it down to 4. Houston, 1 of 2 free throws to get it to 5, bucket to 3, layup block. Then A&M's last possession, miss offensive rebound, timeout, miss 3, offensive rebound, miss 3, tie up, possession arrow A&M, 1 second, inbounds 3, OT. And they still lose. Formula coming up next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Start your morning with a daily dose of winning strategies, insider tips, and the latest buzz with a free VSiN daily newsletter. In today's newsletter,
Adam Burke previews on all Sweet 16 matchups and more.
We get a little dose of Adam Burke on the show today.
Got him in an hour.
He's a tough one to book. Get expert analysis and the latest odds delivered straight to your inbox. Absolutely free. Visit VSiN.com/newsletter to subscribe. Mike Somich coming up with his Sweet 16 thoughts, as well as Matty Cox from Three Man. We will get into all of it. There's so much to talk about from this this past weekend. By the way, the only thing people want to tweet about is when I teased most annoying commercials. That's coming up at the top of the hour. Most annoying commercials of the weekend coming up at the top of the hour. But this one is from, I want to read this, Sean's Fox Plays. Gil, can we put to rest the ACC demise now that people are saying, and end preseason rankings that inflate teams' wins versus teams we don't even know are good yet? Also, an investigation needs to happen on the Texas Tech refs they brought to the game. Oh, there were so many games where the officiating was like, seemed a little skewed. There was more than just one game. There was a lot of those where you're like, okay.
It's awful.
Yeah. Seemed to be. Anyway, maybe that's through your betting lens, though, of who you've gotten all those, so we don't want to get into that necessarily. Yes, about the ACC conferences. The ACC with 4 of the remaining 16 left. UNC, NC State, Duke, and Clemson. ACC 8-1, the only loss being that UVA first 4-in game. Their win total in this tournament was 6, the ACC. They have already soared over it. Over 6 was plus 110. They've already won 8. 8-1. 5 ACC teams got in. Only UVA in the first 4 bounced out. UNC, NC State, Duke, and Clemson still there. Big East. All 3 teams that were in, still there. 6-0. Over 7.5 at plus 110 was their pre-flop number for the Big East. That looks like UConn might just get it done for them here in the next couple rounds, if not Marquette and Creighton helping out as well. So that looks like it's going to go over. Not so good categories. Big 12 started with 8. They've only got 2 left. Houston and Iowa State, 7-6. Baylor was the Baylor won a game, as did Kansas, as did Texas. But BYU, TCU, and Texas Tech all lost. Their tournament win total was 13.5. They're 7-6 with only 2 teams remaining out of the initial 8. They're not getting there. That's an under for those who had the under. That'll cash. SEC started with 8. Only Tennessee and Bama are still alive. Their tournament win total was 11. That's an under. A&M did win a game, but everybody else, South Carolina, Auburn, Kansas, Florida, Mississippi State, they all lost as higher seeds, it should be mentioned, than their opponents. Big Ten started with six teams. Only Purdue and Illinois are alive. Their win total was eight. They have a chance to get there. That one's still in doubt. Mountain West, it's going to be up to San Diego State. They're the only one of the six that remain. Their number was 4.5 for that conference. They're at 4, so San Diego State's got to pull off the upset. Unlikely, but that's what has to happen for that to go over.
Man, what a dicey bet. They got that many wins before all of them lost, though?
That's right.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, Utah State, Nevada. Nevada blew their game, right? San Diego State. Do they have four? Yeah, they do have four.
I don't even remember anymore. Yeah. Thursday's like forever ago.
But boy, oh boy. Let's see. Pac-12, Arizona still alive, but they're 5-3 because Wazoo and Colorado and Oregon each got a win there. So they're at 5. So they're right on their total. So Arizona wins one more. They go over the Pac-12.
It was at 5?
Yeah, right on it. Did I leave anybody out? Did I say SEC? Yes, I did. Oh, and then again, the West Coast Conference. Gonzaga's already won twice. I don't know what their total was. I have to check on their total, but we got everybody else, right? Big East, Pac-12, ACC, Mountain West, Big 10, yeah. SEC, Big 12. Formula time?
Great market. Yeah.
It is a great market. By the way, there was also, we also mentioned that we did the seeding bracket, like seed all the one seeds, all the two seeds, all the three seeds, all the four seeds. All that's alive is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 11. And the numbers on those, I'll have to find. But really, remember, the one seeds were minus 130. That obviously included UConn. So that is the one that is still the chalkiest of the chalk. So a lot of people bet that.
Here, I got them here. Minus 130.
Two seeds were plus 350. Four seeds were 7-1. Three seeds were 10-1. Five seeds, 25-1. Six seeds, 40-1. You have 11 seed? We didn't do 11 seed.
I stopped it. I stopped it at 10. 10 seed was 90-1.
All right. So if you think North Carolina State is, we don't have the number.
I stopped it. DraftKings had them posted. Okay. I stopped it to make the graphic work.
Kelly had a poetic license. He stopped
That's
it.
That's right.
All right. Championship formula. Remember, tried and true through the years here on A Numbers Game. Also the Beating the Book and Betting Dork podcast before that. We've done this for, over a decade. And again, last 33 champs had more assists than turnovers. The point of this, again, as crazy as rounds 1 and 2, round of 64 and round of 32s usually are, ultimately picking a winner is kind of easy if you stick to the formula. Last 33 champs had more assists than turnovers. 31 of the last 33 champs had a head coach with Sweet 16 experience. Only Kevin Ollie from the 2014 UConn Huskies and last year's 2023 Huskies with Danny Hurley are the exceptions. 27 of the last 28 champs went to the tournament with at least 3 wins versus teams in the top 10% of RPI. That's how long we've been doing this. We still quote the RPI number. Guess who the exception is, Kelly? I think you know.
UConn.
2014 UConn Huskies. Last 28 champs had a top 75 strength of schedule. That Duke kind of teetered on this year. 20 of the last 21 champs were in the top 20 in adjusted offensive efficiency at KenPom. Only the 2014 UConn Huskies, the exception. They were 39th in adjusted offense, and 20 of the last 21 champs were in the top 20 in adjusted defensive efficiency. The only exception, the only non-UConn exception to any of this, the 2021 Baylor Bears, who actually finished 22nd.
Wait, what was your comment about Duke?
Duke has a couple. We'll get to this right now, who qualifies and who doesn't. Duke.
Their strength of schedule is barely there?
Yeah, I think so. If I recall that correctly. Do I have that wrong? I don't think I do.
Pull it back up. I'm just thinking about the ridiculousness to say that Duke doesn't have one. I mean, I know you can only control how well your conference does, but you can control booking some out of conference games that are tougher.
The real denier for Duke is that John Shire has not been to a Sweet 16 before just now. So here are the teams. So there's 16 teams left in the tournament. Here are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Do I have that right? 4, 5, 8. Yes. Here are the 8 that are not qualifying. Okay. NC State doesn't. Clemson doesn't. San Diego State doesn't. Alabama doesn't. Gonzaga doesn't. Illinois does not. Iowa State does not. And even Tennessee is a little too far on the outside looking in to even be considered here. They're 30th in adjusted offensive efficiency at KenPom. Okay, that leaves the other half of the field.
They were in it at one point, they right? Like a couple weeks ago.
And then they just had a bad offensive stretch at the end of the season.
I mean, they're right in that 30 range. Yeah, I mean, so 20 to 30, they've been bouncing around in that range.
With apologies to Tennessee. They probably should be in the next category, but they're kind of teetering.
Right.
Here are the three of the remaining eight that are just on the outside looking in, and Duke is one of those. But Duke can't because of the Sweet 16 qualifier for the coach. But Duke is actually in the top 20 in adjusted offense and defense at KenPom. Duke is actually 5th and 19th, respectively. But again, no Sweet 16 for Shire, so they're on the outside. Marquette and Creighton are just on the outside looking in. Marquette, 19th and 21st adjusted offense and defense. Creighton, 11th and 23rd. Which leaves us with five. Now remember, before the tournament started, there were four qualifiers. Auburn was one of them. Auburn is the only team that was of any repute in any of this, because the Kentuckys of the world were not even part of this. But Auburn was the only team heading into this tournament within the formula of any repute that has been bounced. So you're like, well, shouldn't there be three left? Yes, but two others have sort of crept in the first two games of the tournament. The two that have crept in, the North Carolina Tar Heels, now 16th in offensive efficiency and 6th in defensive efficiency over at KenPom. And Purdue, which was always just on the doorstep, 3rd in offense, 16th in defense adjusted efficiency at KenPom. But the three that remain at the top with Purdue and UNC remain as entrenched as ever. Arizona, 9th and 10th. Tommy Lloyd. Prove me wrong. 9th and 10th adjusted offense and defensive efficiency at KenPom. Houston, 14th and 2nd, even though Houston made a mess of the end of that game last night with A&M as we just rolled through rapid fire.
They're losing. That's all I got. There is no way Houston survives this tournament. I don't trust the offensive consistency on that team.
I don't think anyone else does either, and they almost blew it yesterday. And then UConn, of course, is at the top of the mountain. They're 2nd and 8th, respectively, in adjusted offense and adjusted defense over efficiency over at KenPom. And it really did feel like when you were watching this tournament that it's a UConn and everyone else.
Absolutely. 100%. I think the team that's made me maybe change my mind the most on them is Purdue.
You still don't think UConn and Houston are headed for a collision?
I don't know about Houston.
I don't either, but I guess the question is...
They might have to keep playing games like last night.
Who's UConn's second? And I don't know that I have a clear answer to that.
That's a great point.
Don't know that I have a clear answer to that. Anyway, that's your formula right now with UConn, Houston, and Arizona still at the mountaintop with Carolina and Purdue now. We'll come back. Matty Cox, Mike Somich, Jake Hahn, Adam Burke. It's a numbers game at Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Start betting smarter with a VSiN Pro subscription. Sign up on a VSiN Pro annual subscription today and get your first year for only $199 instead of the typical price of $240. Just use promo code ANG. Get VSiN Pro access to everything we do for an entire year, including our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Betting systems, premium analysis, 24/7 video access, plus access to our March Madness betting hub with picks for every game of the tournament. Remember, though, to use promo code ANG.
ANG as in a numbers game, folks.
Get your first year of VSiN Pro access for only $199. Sign up today at VSiN.com/subscribe. We get tweets, and a bunch of them are commercial tweets. I haven't even done this segment yet. People want to talk about that. This is from, Larry Fresh. In town for the week, took my nephew to Nora's. He asked, how did you hear about this salami pizza? I replied, Gil from a numbers game. He then asked, does he know any sushi spots? No, he did not. It's a lot.
Just ran into Larry. About an hour ago.
Larry showed me a picture of the salami pizza. Looked great. Looked absolutely wonderful. This is from Kevin Ryan. Seriously, Gil, what is going on with the staggered and stretching out of the tournament games? You're right. It's absurd. Sincerely yours, MLB Awards. That's very true.
Hey, I know. Scheduling in every sport's a nightmare. I don't know about you, Gil, but it's every time I start to feel bad about it, though, or get mad about it, I feel so bad for everybody on the East Coast.
Brad Billups, couldn't agree more on the Saturday and Sunday start times point. There should be at least two games going simultaneously during those first two blocks, those two game start times. Most vulnerable, number one, he says Houston Any questions? That is the one big negative of the tournament, how they scheduled it yesterday and Sunday. And again, this is because they went to four networks and they thought we're going to show people the whole games. And that's how it is. We want more windows where there isn't a competing game. It's just it was so great as a kid when it was like, and now we go here to this region and this fantastic finish. Whatever. Anyway, again, half the games hadn't started yet at 7 p.m. Eastern. Matty Cox joins us, everybody, from Three Man Weave, the godfather, the George Washington, the founding father of Three Man Weave, courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. Yes, I was having issues staying awake during those late night tips, even in Central Time. Personally, my fault, getting the 5:30 flight yesterday morning back home from the desert.
Oh.
But, man, that Houston A&M finish at least got us a little jolt of energy. My goodness,
it was incredible. But I guess there's a lot of people in the country probably didn't see it. It was one of those also where even if you were awake in the Pacific time zone, it was so out of nowhere that you might have not been paying attention. You almost had
it
to
was very vintage A&M, like last second, just muck the game up. Death by a thousand paper cuts. And sure enough, they made enough crazy shots, and Houston missed just enough free throws, and the game was tied. And it's like, oh my god, this game is now on the precipice of being an all-timer.
Well, it was a reminder that fouling early in college basketball still can work. And I don't know why a lot of teams got away from that this year, but certainly in a tournament, I'm surprised we haven't seen it more. You were just saying off air real quick, you said, are we enjoying this tournament? You had a little question mark at the end. Are you enjoying it?
I'm enjoying it. I enjoy every tournament, Gil, but I know I'm in the 1% of the 1%. You got to think there's probably some out there who would be yearning for more upsets. I think it's been the prevailing narrative is how dominant the favorites have been. And I think in the later rounds, we all like that, right? But yes. In the early round, we'd probably like to see more of the Oaklandy type stuff. I mean, outside of Oakland, I don't think NC State even feels like a Cinderella, right? It's just a good ACC team that probably is undervalued. And DJ Burns is fun, and that's a great character. But outside of that, like, there's just not a lot of the slippers did not fit that well this year, I don't think.
Not past the first round. Yeah,
right.
They really didn't. And even the first round, as you said, was sparse. Okay, before we get to your picks here on the Sweet 16, biggest takeaway beyond that, was there a team that's still alive, maybe a team that got knocked out, where you're like, well, that's unfortunate, or I didn't see that coming, or I did see that coming, and there it is?
I would say the UConn ascension to one of the best teams to maybe the best team to like very clearly the best team. And I don't see how they're losing. That was great for me. And I think with Houston, you were starting to see some cracks there, mostly just because of the injuries and the lack of depth they had. And then Purdue, I know they've been dominant as well, but I kind of put that on Utah State. I think Utah State was a team that kind of checked out, bad matchup. Danny Sprinkle is rumored to be maybe leaving that job for somewhere else. So I have a couple of those incidents. You look at FAU, my Owls, Dusty May signing his deal 24 hours later. They didn't look very prepared either. So I don't give Purdue a ton of credit, but UConn was just all the way dominant. I think they're going to see, I believe we'll see a similar run of dominance as we did last year. It's funny, this team's not as good as last year, but relative to the field and how well they play together, they are playing to that level, to that rating, no question.
Matt Cox from Three Man Weave coming to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. All right, let's go to the Sweet 16, Thursday and Friday. Let's do about 30 seconds on each of these if you can. We'll do them chronologically. Let's start Thursday night. Illinois-Iowa State. It's an East regional game, the 3-2 game, the 3-2 seeds, with Iowa State favored by 2, the total at 146.
I like Illinois. It's the only one I have an official play on so far.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I was just looking at some of the movement, and it's been pretty stagnant. Yeah, it's staying around 2 pretty much over right now. I'm the wrong team's favorite here. I know Iowa State's been awesome, and it's a team that many sharps, including myself, have underrated and probably got wrong for a good chunk of the year. But I did have them in the first round. I think I've made my proper adjustments with how good they are. But Illinois, the talent level, the way they can just take you apart in transition. Iowa State's defense is a different beast that Illinois has not seen, but I think great offense beats great defense generally at this point in the tournament, especially with the way Terrence Shannon is shooting Marcus Domask. I just like the Jimmies and Joes there.
All right. We don't have to do them one by one if that's your only play, but I want to ask you in different ways. The next game is San Diego State and UConn. UConn's favored by 10.5. Based on what you just said, you think that's appropriate at this point?
It's been, yeah, my lean was UConn on the opener. It's been bet up by a point and a half in some places. Yeah, I've been kind of out on the Aztecs all season, to be honest. So I think they continue to prove me wrong. Dudger's a great coach, but I just think that San Diego State's physicality and athleticism is just going to be thwarted completely by UConn, who's just a better overall version of what they bring to bear. It's a big number. It does feel big, but I'd still lean toward UConn.
All right. Also on Thursday, Carolina is a 4-point favorite over Alabama. Yeah. Alabama won that game against Grand Canyon in a different kind of Alabama way yesterday.
Right.
Do you feel like they're live against Carolina?
Yes, I do. And I think you feel the same way, Gil. I know you mentioned you have some futures investments with them. I said, I agree with you. I think the defense is overly ridiculed. It's better than people think. And they've brought in that freshman big guy, Big Mo, I think I can't say his last name. But there are defensive pieces that Oates can call upon that they can bring in to bring that type of look when they need it. And I think that's where you need that, some of that adaptability, that malleability in the tournament. I like their talent. I'm not a UNC guy. You can argue the line feels short. I think Bama should be closer to like a 2-point dog here. I do like the Tide.
The only one we haven't mentioned on Thursday is Arizona's a touchdown favorite over Clemson by 7. I have no thoughts on that. You?
No thoughts. Clemson's been good at slowing these games down and getting teams into execution-based affairs. I kind of think that they might be live, too, with the way they're playing, but I'm not touching that game either.
All right, let's go to Friday. Purdue is a 5-point favorite in the Midwest region against Gonzaga, the 5 seed. There was a point this year, Dave Check, who did the Showtime Action docuseries, is doing a Gonzaga documentary right now, and he followed them all year. And there was a point, and I think it was late December, where Mark Few genuinely was like, I don't know if we're making the tournament. Here they are in the 9th consecutive Sweet 16. It's incredible. What do you think about that line? 5 points in favor of the Boilermakers.
Yeah, well, they played earlier this year. And I'm always confused as to how much stock you want to put into a previous matchup, right? Especially when these non-conference situations that happened months and months ago. But that was a 5.5-point spread there. So it's funny to see basically the same price emerge 3 months later. I kind of lean toward Gonzaga, but nothing profound.
Okay.
Again, Purdue's been awesome, but I think that was largely Utah State aided yesterday.
How about Tennessee and Rick Barnes? 2.5-point favorites against Creighton in the 2-3 in the Midwest.
A slight lean toward the jump shooting Jays, as I call them, but I just do not like betting on them because of the variance of their games. So many threes they take. They allow a ton of threes. So that's why I didn't touch that one. Fun. Well, I think the price is about right, though. 2.5. I think Tennessee's slightly better on a neutral.
All right. South region, 3-11 game. The only double-digit seed alive. Marquette is a 6.5-point favorite over NC State after getting by Colorado. And I thought a game where Marquette just had to shoot lights out early to win, and they did.
Right. Their depth is starting to catch up to them. This does feel big. I feel like people are going to just kind of count out NC State as sort of this like joke of a Cinderella with the run and the path they had. But Marquette's lack of depth, I think, makes them less appetizing as a favorite. Shock as a dog, we like. Shock as a favorite, shorthanded in the backcourt, not as much.
All right. And finally, Duke 4-point dogs against Houston.
Price is right. Matchup terrible for Duke. I will probably take Houston. I just want to see what the injury situation is with those big guys. But we've seen Duke get punched in the mouth up front by physical teams multiple times this year. Arizona at home being the prevailing precedent that I'm looking at there. Again, Houston's depth concerns me. Their free throw shooting concerns me. A lot of their offensive inconsistencies concern me. Jared McCain's an absolute star. I still think it's a terrible matchup for Duke. I think Houston punches them right in the mouth.
All right, exit question of the ones that are not 2.5-point favorites. In other words, throw out Iowa State, throw out Tennessee. Big favorite most likely to lose is
Arizona, and I know you agree with that.
I do. It came around on Tommy Lloyd.
Oh, the free throw shooting.
Matt, thank you so much for the time, man. Appreciate it.
No, thank you, fellas. Always a pleasure.
Matt Cox at 3MW _CBB for all that 3-Man Weave does. A little hockey with Jake Hahn next.
Numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's never been a better time to have skin in the game with DraftKings Sportsbook, because right now we have a VSiN exclusive offer for new DraftKings customers. Earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. How about that? You can earn up to $2,500 worth of bonus bets in your first 3 days on DraftKings. Don't wait. Download the app now. Use code ANG when you sign up and earn a $500 bonus bet for every $1,000 you wager. Now, it's Gil Alexander. Tennis plays for the day. Kelly, by the way, Kelly, real brief. You didn't really happen to have Peter Malnati to win the Valspar, did you, by any chance?
Well, I'm so glad you brought it up, Gil. clearly, you don't remember Wednesday's show when I had Keith Mitchell at 50-1, who had a 2-stroke lead heading into the final round yesterday.
Oh, I do remember that, and actually. Then,
I don't even know what he shot, 6 over or something yesterday. He was done from the jump. The first tee shot, he hit one so far left. When they brought a camera over there finally, I honestly think he was in one of like the annex parking lots. Like there was like cars.
Long-term parking?
Yeah, it was a long-term parking.
A 6 over 77 is to answer your question.
Terrible.
Here are the tennis picks. And by the way, one of these starts in 15 minutes. So apologize for not getting to them earlier, but it was a fantastic weekend. We are 4 in a row now here, 3 of which were dogs, a couple of which were sizable dogs. Over 23 units on the hard court season in 2024. It's been unbelievable. We are going to miss hard courts once clay starts next week. We'll see if we can keep it going. Today, the three that I'm playing, and you can get as good, if not better, numbers. Anna Kalinskaya, I got it +130. Against Maria Sakkari. Okay, she's not as good. Pardon me. She's the one that's not as good. She's only +109. I'd still play her because there's no world where she should be plus money to Maria Sakkari based on numbers. So Anna Kalinskaya was the first play. That's the only one that's worse than what you can get them at, because you can get better numbers for me on these two. Yulia Putintseva, I got it -106. She's right around there. She's actually -101. So a little better against Angelina Kalinina. Kelly, if your last name was Kalinina, would you name your kid Angelina Kalinina?
No, that's a bold move. That seems cruel to the child.
And then on the men's side, Sebastian Korda, I got it +148. You can actually get him about 5 cents better.
Okay.
Against Sepp Korda, the American, taking on Hubert Hurkacz on the men's side.
Nelly Korda just won the LPGA event yesterday.
Sebastian Korda, otherwise known as Nelly Korda's brother. I'm sure he'd love that. He's already one of my favorite people when he talks hockey with us. We go sidebar golf with him sometimes, and I just learned he actually bets tennis as well. I love this guy. It's Jake Kahn, everybody, coming to us courtesy of the Progressive Guest Line. Jake, you betting Miami Open? Are you doing that?
Of course, I'm with you on Kalinskaya, actually. So Gil, we're on the same side there, and I'll give you a couple on the men's side as well that also start in about 10-15 minutes. Let's go to Alexei Popyrin money line.
Oh,
and
I like
Cerundolo to grab a set. You could probably find it close to plus money. So Cerundolo to get a set and Popyrin money line.
Alexei Popyrin, I won on as a dog yesterday against Yuri Lehechka, and Popyrin was like my last match eliminated from my plays today. So I'm with you on Popyrin there.
Who's showing up?
I apologize to Kelly for another losing golf bet with Keith Mitchell. It's even worse when you lose to a guy that has a yellow ball and a bucket hat.
Oh, God, it really is. The bucket hat really rubs it in. It really does. You're absolutely right. Peter Baldotti rocks a really ugly bucket hat. Who's showing up at Hard Rock Stadium, though, for these tennis matches?
Bro, can I tell you something?
10:45 on a Monday?
Not only that. First of all, the weather's been terrible. But they got Casper Ruud on camera talking to an umpire saying, I know it's not your fault, but like we don't have towels. We don't have cold water.
Oh,
the chairs
gosh.
Are plastic chairs. And it's really highlighted because they just came back from Indian Wells. It's Indian Wells to Miami. And Indian Wells is like first class, fifth major.
A tennis destination.
Tennis paradise, they call it. And so it's for the players, it's like, this is ridiculous. And again, it used to be in Key Biscayne. And it was just so great in Key Biscayne. But Key Biscayne is an island. They can't build it wider. There's the one guy whose family gave the land to Miami, his family generations ago. And the stipulation was, we get to determine partially what you get to use it for. And they are responsible also. And by the way, the residents of Key Biscayne don't want it to be there either. Yeah. They don't like the traffic. So anyway, Jay comes to us generally because he's the co-host of the Point and the Fantasy Hockey Show on SiriusXM NHL. Sorry about the golf and tennis sidebars there for those who are into those picks. At Jay Hahn 4, by the way, H-A-H-N, the number 4. Jake, I don't think I've ever asked you this question before, and I'm curious. In baseball, when we're handicapping either preseason when we're talking about season wins, or midseason when we're talking about futures heading into the postseason. We talk about one-run games, teams' records in one-run games, how they've done in extra innings as a sort of way to determine who's gotten the best of it, who's gotten the worst of it in the coin flip games. In hockey, you have overtime losses, and I think the record for the most points in overtime losses, I think the most overtime losses, period, I think is 18, shared by four different clubs over the years. We have a couple teams that have 15 this year, the Islanders being one of them, the Bruins being the other. And the Bruins are 10-1, for instance, to win the Stanley Cup. But with 15 overtime losses, do you ever, when you're handicapping hockey, consider that as a sort of fulcrum point for these teams and triggers a bet or not for you?
Yeah, I think there was a year too. I want to say it was a. I think it was last year actually, where the Florida Panthers had a lot of 3-on-3 overtime wins. And I think you look at it from the other way and you say, okay, well, we don't play 3-on-3 OT come playoff time.
Right.
We play 5-on-5 and let even strength, right? So I think you could look at it like that a little bit and just see teams that have maybe been propped up by winning in 3-on-3 or winning in a shootout and think, okay, they can't carry that over to the playoffs. That doesn't mean you necessarily throw away the team, but I think it is something to look at. And like you mentioned, Gil, a couple teams have just been living off of the loser points. That's what we call them on the show, the loser points, getting a point for losing an OT or a shootout. Islanders have kept themselves in a playoff race probably longer than they should have because of it. And the Bruins are hanging around for first in the Atlantic Division because of it as well. So it would worry me a little bit about the Bruins, not necessarily whether they're winning or losing in overtime, but the fact that they're just playing so many close games, that they're not going out and dominating teams the way that they did a lot last year, I think that would give me cause for concern going into the playoffs when looking at the Bruins as a contending team.
Oh, that's interesting, because as the not as close to the sun hockey guy as you are, I would have thought it would be the opposite, that here the Bruins are, that they should have won more of these overtime games if they were full strength, let's say, right? Because as Jake pointed out, for those who don't know, hockey overtimes during the regular season, 5 minutes, sudden death, 3-on-3. Like, it's just, you know, a complete variation of the actual sport. Whereas in the postseason, it's 20-minute periods. If you don't score, you know, full strength 20-minute period, you go to another 20-minute period and you see who scores first. So that's interesting, because I would have viewed it as, oh, that's maybe the Bruins are better than the standings show. But you're saying it's the opposite.
Well, yeah, you can look at it and say Boston might be happy to be done with 3-on-3 OT and a shootout, right? When you get into the playoffs, and look, you're going to be playing close games no matter what. Very rarely are you just going to go out and dominate teams in the playoffs and win games 5-1, 6-1. It can certainly happen, but for the most part, you're going to be playing 1-2 goal games, and you're going to need to find a way to come up with clutch goals in the third period and find ways to win those overtime games, because more often than not, that flips the series. So if you want to spin a narrative for Boston, I could certainly see that. It's just, for me, they've played too many close games against teams that they should be dominating. So I think when it comes to playoffs and they're facing top tier competition, it just worries me that they're going to be able to hang in those games and ultimately win those games and find a way to score the big goals when it matters.
All right. That's super interesting to me. I hadn't really dived in on that. All right. Tonight, just a couple games, Golden Knights, Blues, Kings, Canucks. Anything here?
Blues, Vegas. This is actually a really big game. If the St. Louis Blues have any hope of making the playoffs, this is one they probably need to win. And I would say win in regulation would go a long way to getting it done. We just talked about the loser point. So if you go into OT and you beat them, you're only really gaining 1 point. They need to try to win this game in regulation, and you're getting them at a home dog price. Now, Vegas hasn't really played very good hockey for a while now. They have won a couple games in a row coming into this. No Aiden Hill tonight for Vegas between the pipes, as he's injured, which honestly might be a good thing because he has really struggled lately as well. So Logan Thompson will get the call. I like the Blues here on the money line. I think there's some value with the home dog. You're going to get a desperate Blues team knowing and probably treating this like a playoff game. Not that Vegas won't as well, but I like the Blues at this price. I think there's still a little bit of value, and you can look to Jordan Kyrou in the shot prop market if you're interested there as well.
All right, real quick, because we got to run, but this might be only interesting to me. Ovechkin and all of a sudden a goal surge like days of yore. What's happening there?
Honestly, I think they've done a better job surrounding him with young players. Caps are a really old roster, and they've infused a little bit of youth in the second half. If that's something they can carry into next year, we could see Ovi return to form and have a monster season. It's just fun to watch him scoring goals and having a good time again.
Sure is. The grade eight, less than 50. to Gretzky for the goal leader all time. Thank you, Jake. Appreciate it, man.
Thanks, boys. Have a great week.
Jake Hahn, tennis, golf, and hockey. Most annoying commercials next.